On the show today, doppelgangers.
Okay, guys, going to the moon.
Good evening, America, and welcome aboard Apollo 13.
On April 11th, 1970, the historic U.S. spaceflight Apollo 13 launched.
Okay, Houston, we have LEM extraction.
Maybe you saw the 1995 movie about it.
We copy that, 13.
With Tom Hanks, Bill Paxton, and Kevin Bacon.
Houston, we have a problem.
And remember that scene? The pivotal scene. When the oxygen tank explodes on board.
Gas of some sort.
It's got to be the oxygen.
Stranding the astronauts in space.
There's another master alarm, Houston.
And sending the mission into turmoil.
We've got a computer restart.
I'm going to reconfigure the RCS.
We've got to...
It was a disaster. The world watched as the astronauts drifted further and further away from Earth. How to get the spacecraft back on track and come home? Well, NASA had numerous simulators on the ground that were being fed data from the real spacecraft 200,000 miles away.
So let's get to work. Let's lay it out.
These simulators could replicate what was happening on board.
Give me the exact same conditions we've got in there now.
And strategize how to get the astronauts back safely.
Let's not make things worse by guessing.
It helped NASA predict and then execute the return mission that brought the astronauts home.
Hello, Houston. This is Odyssey. It's good to see you again.
Today, we have a word for a souped-up version of NASA's simulators, digital twins. These are computer simulations that are constantly being updated with real-time data, and the technology is getting much more advanced. Instead of the astronauts sending data back to mission control, aircrafts and their simulators, for example, can send data back and forth, mirroring and guiding each other.
What really makes a digital twin special is that that virtual representation is connected to the physical world, and there's a bidirectional flow between the virtual and the physical.
This is aerospace engineer Karen Wilcox.
And then that digital twin is now becoming a personalized, dynamic virtual representation, which in turn can be used to drive new decisions.
You could have a digital version of your home and track how your energy costs would rise or fall if you went solar. Car companies are building digital twins of their new designs to see how they'll respond under different conditions. Karen says the applications for digital twins are endless. But remember, she's an aerospace engineer, and so she's pretty excited about how they're being used in her field.
I want you to think about the digital twin of my aircraft.
Here's Karen Wilcox on the TED stage.
So as I create that digital twin, I'm going to be collecting data from the sensors on board the aircraft. I'm going to be collecting data from inspections I might make of the aircraft, and I'm going to be assimilating that data into the models. And what's really important is that I'm not building a generic model of just any old Telemaster aircraft. I am building a personalized model of the very aircraft that is right now sitting in my garage down the road in South Austin. And so that digital twin will capture the differences, the variability from my aircraft to, say, my neighbor's aircraft. And what's more, that digital twin will not be static. It's going to change as my aircraft ages and degrades and gets damaged and gets repaired. We will be assimilating data all the time, and the digital twin will follow the aircraft through its life.
You can imagine in some future world that an operator, an airline, has a digital twin for every single one of the aircraft in their fleet. And that digital twin is being updated every day or maybe even every hour with data collected from its physical twin so that it is an up-to-date representation of everything that's going on with that aircraft. And it's now able to identify when a problem may be about to occur before you get all those passengers on the plane. And you can imagine the value in that, that first of all, that keeps us safer. Second of all, it leads to more efficient practices, which saves money. It keeps the engines running more efficiently, which has reduced environmental impact. So just a lot that can be done by having your fingers on personalized, dynamic, just-in-time information.
And predictive, right? Like you could say, well, this time around, the aircraft is going to be fine, but after 6 more flights to Minneapolis, we need to definitely check this particular part because the model has looked into the future and shown that this is a potential issue.
That is exactly right. And the models are really, when combined with the data, what let us predict into the future and to make predictions about conditions that we haven't seen yet. And then that's really what drives decision making.
Let's talk about another more personal way that digital twins are going to be in our lives, and that comes to healthcare. And my understanding is you have partnered with a group of oncologists to research how digital twins can be used in cancer treatment.
That's right. So here at UT Austin, we started talking with the Center for Computational Oncology and the Odin Institute, who are really interested in the idea of digital twins as a way to move towards personalized cancer care. And as my group of aerospace engineers started talking with the group of oncology experts, began to really realize that even though the physics, the biology, of course, is very different, there's so many common challenges.
So Karen says, picture a patient with a brain cancer diagnosis. The first step, taking lots of images of their brain.
Where is the tumor? How big is it? How dense is it?
Using all that data, scientists can build a virtual version of the tumor.
We have very powerful models, mathematical models, that can represent a tumor and make predictions about how that tumor is going to grow. Is it going to end up pushing on different parts of the anatomy?
But here's the crucial goal. Using the tumor's digital twin to predict which treatment it will respond to best, based on so many factors, like the patient's anatomy.
Her physiology, on what's going on with her body, we think we would be better to front-load some of her radiotherapy and then give her a break in the middle and then go back to high doses. The future vision is really having the digital twin work hand-in-hand with the human clinician to try to achieve the best outcomes for that individual patient.
I mean, that sounds amazing. So you could create a digital twin based on what your cardiovascular strength is and your blood type. And then could you add variations to see how things would go? Like, so for example, if you got chemotherapy and you quit smoking and brought your blood pressure down, we think we could predict that your outcome would be X. If you didn't do those things, here's what that could look like. That kind of thing?
That's absolutely the vision. We're still a long way from being able to get to that point. You can imagine that as human beings, our biological systems are so incredibly complex.
Yeah.
And we still don't yet have the computational power to be able to model a full human where we could really start to connect all those different things you mentioned. But what you described, absolutely, this is the vision.
So that's the health of a human. But explain how the same sort of modeling applies to improving the health of our planet.
Yeah, absolutely. A future vision is, could we one day have a digital twin of planet Earth? Being able to have a digital twin at the scale of full planet Earth goes well beyond what we can do today with our models and our algorithms and our data. But I think this is a fantastic vision because it also starts to think about integrating all those disparate pieces of our planet Earth that we know are connected so that we really start to make decision-making in a holistic way as a planet rather than as individuals or individual nations.
I mean, that word holistic, that really seems to capture the promise of digital twins when it comes to solving all these big problems like mortal illnesses and, gosh, climate change.
That's exactly right.
So this sounds like a huge challenge, and indeed it is. But the good news is that we have a lot of hope for addressing this challenge. And a big part of this hope rests on this notion of predictive physics-based models that let us make predictions, predict how an Antarctic ice sheet might flow under different future temperature scenarios to help guide decisions about where to drill ice cores, where to take observations, and ultimately to inform the decision-making around our future climate. I hope you're excited like I am about the idea of a digital twin. And maybe as you go home, you can look around and think, ooh, what if we had a digital twin of that? I personally could not be more excited about a future world where digital twins are enabling safer, more efficient engineering systems. They're enabling a better understanding of the natural world around us, and they're enabling better medical outcomes for all of us as an individual. Thank you.
My digital twin would have told me at 47 to enjoy red wine because within the next couple of years, my body would not be able to metabolize it as well.
The prediction would have been there and you could have taken that trip to Tuscany before it was too late, right?
Right? Exactly.
That was aerospace engineer Karen Wilcox. You can see her full talk at TED.com. On the show today, doppelgangers. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. We'll be right back.